Good morning. Welcome back to day two. First thing I want to do is thank AgriCoatings for an outstanding reception last night. Thanks to Jim and his crew for sponsoring that. And also, I want to thank Trinity, a division of Pro Ampac, for this morning's coffee so that we could all wake up appropriately. So thank you. I'm pleased to start our program off today with David Roller, who is from is Technical Service Manager for BASF Color Biotics. He's been with BASF for 15 years, but he's been in the industry for 25, and we're going to do a review of colorant technologies from, I believe, 1992, when everything was powered by dinosaurs, up to the current period. So, David?
Thank you, Bob. So I didn't have to manage anybody but myself. You can see there what I've done in the industry. And then I've been on a bunch of yards. So I've been on probably most of yours that are in here. And you know, there's old going away and new coming in all the time. So I've been on quite a few, seen a lot of things. So from my history, the origin, being from Indiana, I live in the great Hoosier State, and we had, you know, a pallet was where we started at. I started off in the pallet business with a mulch company, and when we did that, all our scrap, used to we'd burn it, right? So obviously that wasn't the best way to get rid of it, and we started getting these big stockpiles when they banned burning, and then it kind of went from there. Our start in the business was from a gentleman by the name of Greg Rondi. Some of you may know that name, but that's where we kind of got our start and started selling the material that wasn't there, or that was there that wasn't colored, and then we started coloring it, and that's kind of how it started in the Midwest area for me. The evolution of it has been, you know, back then, it was the first day I ever colored mulch was with a Kurtz screw auger. Okay, which some of you may have had one of those too. So real low tech. You know, you're throwing a bunch of water and a real bad colorant in there, and you're trying to make it work, and it's coming off wet and sloppy. And that's kind of where you relied on the operator to make the mulch that you wanted to make, whether it be good quality or bad. But it was wet, it was messy. And today we're getting into more high tech, where machines are specifically made to color mulch, as opposed to taking something you have and trying to make it work that way. So, and I forgot to mention at the end of this, I do have a question answer if anybody, but if you have a question or comment you want to make prior to, just, and you can't wait, put your hand in the air. So I broke this down into different years. So between 1990 and 96, this is kind of what I saw happen. So the EnviroScrew mulch system was made by Morbark. This was kind of Becker Underwood's kind of first venture into the colored mulch industry. You know, it was, again, it's a bath product. Those of you that don't know what it was, you just dumped a bunch of water and color in the bottom of it, and the screw took it up, and you watched the water run back down. And it was a messy product. It was wet and sloppy when it came out. But it was the beginning. That's what we were doing. Most of them were hydraulic driven, and they were underpowered. So we ran into a lot of problems. It would jam, various things. And again, this is where I'm getting at. The Kurtz brothers, I know they made that product. There's probably others out there that did it, so I'm not intentionally leaving anybody out. But this is kind of where I started in 1992. We had a Kurtz screw which looked almost identical to that. In 2002, Wooden Colors, we sold a brand, it was a twin ribbon auger. It had some advantages, it had some disadvantages. It was a step above the auger, but still a wet product, still using colorants that took 8 pounds of color and a lot of water. So you're really moving a bunch of water. This particular model did not have a hopper, so you had to have an in-feed system to go with it. Those of you that may have had one, as time went on, we did this hood on it, which we called the Extra Dry Advantage, because there's two things in all the equipment that we design at Color Biotics and move forward. There's two things we always try to talk about is color distribution and retention time. Okay, those are your two most important, in my opinion, your two most important things that you have to have whenever you're coloring something or mixing something or blending something. So you can make up for one with the other, but if you can dump everything into one spot if you have a real long mixer for retention time, and it will eventually spread it across the material. Or you can shorten that and distribute your color better. So retention time, color distribution, very important in how you make the machine. So what we did on this one was, instead of the bath process, we started putting in this where we injected color over at the turning points inside the mixer, so that you would spray color at appropriate times and try to cut that retention down and make a better product. So that was our first entry into the level of coloring. Then in 96, this train wreck here was the Second Harvester 30. Did anybody ever have one of those? Good.
So this is the second
generation. The Second Harvester 30 was a good idea on paper, not a good idea in application. We did, however, sell our first one overseas. I think we sold one in Japan. So that was good. It was a long ways away. We didn't have to service it very much. What happened? Bob, did I break it? Oh. So anyway, great. It was designed, as you can see, it's small. It's loaded from the back. It was more of a skid loader operation. So you take your skid loader or a very small loader and you dump into the back of it. It was just not a good, you know, we admit when we make bad stuff. So this was a bad idea from day one. So I'm glad none of you had it. Paddle mixers. Then we got into quite a few of you had the Second Harvester 200 or 100 line. These were the kind of the staple of our business starting in 96. Again, they were one of the first, had the self-contained hopper on it, so you didn't have to have a peripheral hopper to feed it with a conveyor. That was all built in. You know, we had some struggles with it from bridging and various things that we worked through, but you can see here, it was the first real electric machine, wasn't hydraulic powered, bilateral agitation, which is a fancy word meaning it mixes and reverses it, and it maximized the water and color distribution. So we were applying, as we talked about before, retention time and color distribution. So we were distributing color in the hopper and in the mixing section. So you spread out your material over a farther distance and helped with your coverage and your water usage. We sold hundreds of those. We made, I want to say about a dozen mobile units. And by mobile unit, I mean we put it on a trailer and put a motor on it and it was a mobile unit. So a very good machine. There's still quite a few of them. There's probably hundreds of them out there still running today. Good machine. 97. Again, some of you may have done this beforehand, but this is my first experience with it. We started working with a company called Rotor Chopper and coloring and grinders. So again, the whole philosophy there, and some of you still may do it today, was, hey, got one machine, I'm single passing, I might as well color while I'm grinding. If that works for you, that's great. One of the disadvantages, in my opinion, though, is, again, when you talk about color distribution and retention time, how long is a piece of material in a hammer mill? It's not very long. And you're putting all your color in one spot. So has improved a bunch over time. If you look at this picture good, you can see there's puddles of red water underneath of it. So that was one of the ongoing problems at the beginning. Again, if you use that and refined it, great. But many other manufacturers. We have worked with, a half a dozen other manufacturers making pumping systems for them and helping customers modify theirs. We've made manifolds for these, whether it be a horizontal or old tub. We've done that many, many times. So, batch mixers. One of my favorite of all time was a batch mixer. The thing I liked about it, if you're into quality mulch, you can make really good mulch, because if you make a mistake, you can fix it very easily. So this is, for those of you that aren't familiar, FECON made these along with Rotor Chopper, and some people use night mixers. You know, you put your ingredients in, so it's like baking a cake, right? So you dump your mulch in, and then it'd mix, and then you put water in, and you put color in, and it would mix for however long you wanted it to. The nice thing about it was, is if you got done and you looked at your product and it wasn't what you wanted, you could add more color, you could add more water, or whatever. So, I mean, from making a very quality mulch, batch system is the way to go. Disadvantage, not very high production, right? So you're doing 7 yards at a time. A unit like this takes you 15, 20 minutes. That's not a lot of production. So a lot of you guys would be kind of behind the eight ball using these. But again, great concept. And to make one big enough to do 300 yards an hour would be a quite large, expensive unit. So I think they kind of went by the wayside because of that, but it was a great concept. Trommel screens. 1998 was my first experience with it, and as you can see on there, I worked with Mr. Spencer at Mulch Manufacturing. We converted an old machine back in his screening area, his plant in Ohio, worked with his dad John, and we would we converted it to color. What we did, we ended up running a manifold down the center of it. Again, a lot of times people are dumping in their color and water right at the top and letting it kind of mix on its way down. My philosophy, or our philosophy at Colorbiotics, is, you know, let's distribute that, and as that material rotates and turns and flips, let's hit it again, as opposed to making sure that we scrub it enough to get it spread out. So, again, some of you in here may be using those. Great. There's people manufacturing those. Great. So still a bunch of, but it does. It does the job. Again, it's one of those situations where you have existing equipment. You don't want to invest a bunch of money in a coloring machine that just colors. So, you know, I've seen guys do anything from making their own screens that are blanked out to taking a roll of shrink wrap, turning it on, and wrapping around it, right? So you seal it off. It all works, right? So still many of these in use today. All right, now we'll get on to 2000. All right, then wooden colors. Again, we saw that the Pro Series, the twin ribbon blender that we talked about before, it was doing an adequate job. It had peripheral needs such as an infeed conveyor and things like that. So we and of course Becker Underwood at that time was a large competitor of ours, and they had this self-contained unit. So we wanted to do that. So we designed what we called the 9250. We did it in both, as you can see in the picture there, a mobile diesel unit and an electric version. The claim to fame on those was that the hopper auger and the mixer auger were independent of each other, and they both were controlled by variable speed. So you could, with a variety of materials, so if you were a producer that ran three or four different products, you could speed up and slow down your outputs, you could speed up and slow down your mixing time, build or decrease retention time, depending on what you needed to do. When we were bought out by Becker Underwood, we discontinued this line. We still had a few in stock, and sold those out, and there's still some in the field working. I don't know again if any of you have those, but still some out there running. The hydraulic unit was, like I said, self-contained fifth wheel hitch, had its own conveyor, everything. You just show up and start coloring. Then we started doing auto controls. Auto controls was a big feature because it took, made it more of a one-man operation. Okay, so you could be in a loader, you set your machine up, get it ready to go, you load it, the machine starts, it goes down, when it gets empty it stops, waits on you to load it again. Okay, a big feature for that. We at Becker Underwood and Colorbotics, we would use the amperage of the motor is what we'd use it to stop on, or if it's a hydraulic machine, we'd use a hydraulic pressure. So it was a great advancement because the loader operator, again, if he had to go load a truck, he knew his machine would stop. It stopped the color, water, and the mixer, so everything stops. He'd come back, dump in it, and it'd start running again. So we've had numerous iterations of this. Compared to the sensors and devices that we used then, as compared to today, are much improved. But it was a great feature that came out. Remote controls also came out at that same time. So if you didn't want to rely on the sensor and the hopper, you could simply hit a remote control and do what you turn it on, turn it off. And then, oh, I think I skipped one. Nope, I didn't. Then we came out in 2000, actually 1999, the Sahara X Series, which at that time was an X2 machine, which was a 200 yard an hour machine, similar to the second harvester line, same outputs. And this was redesigned. So what we had done with it is we said, okay, we need to build that retention time. We need to do better at that color distribution. So we came up with the air atomization of colorants, which, I mean, we didn't come up with that, but we integrated it into our system. So it's the same as a paint gun. You know, if you paint old cars or paint cars or do body work, same thing, external mix nozzles, same thing we use on them today. We came up with the dual manifolds, again, to spread that colorant out. And I'll show my age a little bit, but we always called it, I call it the coarse and the fine adjustment, like your old TVs you used to have on the farm when I was a kid. You had the little dial to tune in your station you're watching. So the hopper was a coarse adjustment. You basically put a bunch of color and water in there, and then when it got into the mixer section, you sprayed a finish coat on it. This is essentially how it would work. It still does. It came standard with auto controls. And it had outputs up to 300 yards an hour. We later expanded this line into the X1 and the X2 and the X3 so that you had a 150, a 200, and a 300 yard output machine. Very similar in design, just smaller, longer, or shorter based on the output for retention time. We found that on average, about 30% less water than a second harvester and some other units on the market. So the nice thing about that was less weight in the bag, less weight in bulk, trucking, all those things. It was a first patented machine that we had, so I don't know if any of you have gone through the patent process. It's a painstaking ordeal, but once you get to the end of it, it's nice. So that was our first patented issue, and it quickly took over for us as a sales leader. We basically sold very few of the second harvester line once this came out. And here's a little animation on the machine and how it works. So you can see there, it's, you know, we're basically flooding in the hopper, and then you're spraying in the mixing chamber. and you have dual arms. The mixing chamber was larger. It was a 72-inch diameter with dual arms, so you could, again, increase that retention time. You could hold that, build that working level up higher, hold your material in there longer, and produce a better quality product with less water. So if you lower your water use, you got to make that up somehow with retention time or mix. So you got to make your machine longer, or you got to make it more efficient. 2004. So in 2004, we came out with the GEM system. The GEM system being a volumetric control system that attaches to an X-Series machine. Okay, so the original one, you can kind of see a picture of it down there. It measured, it only had a single sensor on the conveyor belt. We measure what we call, it's in a lagging measurement of volumetric control, the GEM system is, whereas the Pro I'll talk about shortly is a leading. So we kind of measure stuff coming out. So those of you that aren't familiar with the GEM system, what it does is, you know, when an operator goes out and sets up his machine, sets up his color and his water, he sets it at certain settings, and then he starts running it. Those of you that color, you know that different materials, different grinds, various things cause the output to actually go up and down. Okay, so this system will account for that. So as you're, instead of having a straight line and having your color going up and down and your output going up and down, your color and water being straight, it follows. Okay, they both go up and down accordingly. So that was our first output. We did it, put it together in 2004. Sales didn't really start on it for a few years, but that's when we came out with it. This was before some of the new modern database and things like that, which I'll cover here shortly. But it would attach it to our X-Series machines, any of them, and it incorporated the auto controls. So it was just a piggyback onto that. So it was easy to connect and run with. The advances for it was, we could be more efficient with our usage of color and water, which, again, is cost and bag weight or yard weight if you're bulk. It utilized the existing color auto controls on the color machine. It increased quality, increased consistency. You didn't get any more of that. It's real red, then it's kind of not red, then it's real red, then it's not red based on your water and color fluctuations. So minimize production errors and increased your overall production. And as part of that, safety controls, which is a big focus for us, was a lot of times on the older machine, we've all done it, I'm sure, they were easy to bypass the safety system. So let's say you have a proximity switch that's on a door that goes bad. Your operator or your mechanic goes out there and just bypasses it real easy, ties two wires together. Well, then you lose your safety, right? So we want to make sure that we keep our operators safe. So we spend a lot of time and energy developing redundant systems and central control safety devices that could not be bypassed. So if you bypass it, basically you nullify it and you can't run the machine. So, which can be, I understand, I get the calls on it, hey, we need to be able to run, right? It's always a fire you got to put out. But we felt safety was more important than just being able to tie a couple wires together. And we improved the systems. We improved the way that you do it. So in the past, a lot of old machines, you would hit an e-stop, and as soon as you pulled that e-stop out, if it was bypassed, the machine would start right back up. Okay, that defies what an e-stop is supposed to be, right? So we require a reset somewhere that an operator can't simply push an e-stop in, pop it out, machine starts going. You have to pop it out, go down, and somebody has to physically push a reset button so that there's knowledge that someone may still be in the machine, someone may be in an area of danger. So we did that. And then we put on everything a secondary, because sensors do go bad, and we put secondary manual locks. So, you know, if a customer called me today and said, hey, Dave, my safety switch went out on my brand new machine, but I got to run, you know, we get them a new part there, and I'd say in the meantime, just padlock it so nobody can get in there. So that was a. Then in 05, we came out with our new lines. We switched, made a big change. We went from blue machines to black machines. So that was a huge change. And we put new improved wear parts in there. So we as the industry got dirtier and dirtier material, You know, back in the pallet days, a machine with its line, with its trough and blades would last 15 years. Now, a lot of times we're closer to topsoil than we are to mulch back in the day. So it's just grit and grime wear. It's no different than your grinders. So we improved that, tried to make those last longer, tried to make them more durable so that you had to replace them less often. CM200s and the infusion, we weren't the first one in this business. There were some others that got there a lot before us and made pump systems, but we got into it. You know, this is for someone that was coloring a grinder or someone that was coloring a trommel screen and just wanted a pump to pump color and a way to meter their water. So we still sell the one that's up on top, our CM200s. We sell quite a few of those, but again, it's a good entry level, but it doesn't, it's a peripheral to something that you already have. So I'm sure all of you are familiar with that. We offer them in both 12 and 120 volts. All right, technology here. Okay, GEM 2.0. This was when we took the GEM from just a novel idea to something really, really good. We invested a huge amount of money and time in creating a database. So all of our equipment that reports to the GEM database shoves it up there. That data is gleaned and then it's sent back to customers in the form of reports. They can get on there and see. It's real-time data, so you can get on a machine today. I get on to a machine wherever and see if they've run it today, if they've run it, how many colors they've colored, how many pounds they've used, how many yards they've produced, all that information. So the database is where all that shoots up to. So all of our systems, whether it be a GEM, a Pro, a GEM LT, they all go up to that same database. You can see here, when we did this upgrade, we made recipes. The original GEM, you had to enter, I want so much color a yard, and I want so much water per yard, and you had to change that for each time you selected your color. Feedback from customers were, hey, it'd be a lot nicer if we could just name a bunch of recipes and you just pick the one you want. I want red, I want black, I want this, I want that. So we did that. It also brought to the screen SOPs for clean out, for operation, for maintenance. It helped us with troubleshooting. We were able to connect these remotely, so if someone called and had an issue, we could get on remotely and work through the problem that way. Again, we talked about the emails, so a supervisor, manager, owner, whomever can get reports, know exactly what that machine did the day before, 2 weeks ago, a month ago, or since day one that thing was installed. So you can kind of keep track of it instead of relying on your operator to give you a piece of paper that says I made this much mulch and I used this much color. This tells you what that does. Had multiple sites. Those customers that had multiple sites, they could have access to all those machines and bring them up at any time they wanted. All right, 2013. This is when we came out with the Pro. Again, I talked about with the GEM, it was a lagging, so it lags a few seconds, so it's on the conveyor belt. Here, we changed the whole concept, and we made a walking floor, live walking floor up on top of the machine, so the hopper is independent of the mixing chamber. So, and it reads the material right as it comes out of the hopper and drops into the machine. So it's a proactive, a leading measurement of the product coming into it from a volumetric standpoint. We also use on-demand nozzles. So here we use water atomization as opposed to air atomization. The reason we went from air is water is heavier and denser. It atomizes product much better than air. So it also helped us eliminate the need for an air compressor. So we were able to, you got to have water, right, to color. So we said, well, let's see how we can use that water in a more efficient way. So we used that water to not only help in the coloring process, but we used it to atomize our colorants. And we found that doing that, we were able to reduce our water output another 30% from our standard X-Series machine. So, I mean, we're knocking a lot of water off. The on-demand injection system, since it's a water, we use medium pressure between 100 and 150 PSI. So as it demands that you need more water, it will start to increase the water pressure. So we know more water pressure will push more through. If it gets to 150 and still doesn't have enough water, it opens another valve brings the pressure back down, and that's a constant cycle. So it's constantly checking that against what you need. So the valve, you're not just opening valves and dumping a bunch of water in there. It's very regulated, and it's controlled by both the number of valves and the pressure of the water. It was connected to the GEM database, so this thing has all the features, benefits. This was our first one that we put maintenance reminders on, so that if you're due for an interval of maintenance, it sends an email to your operator or maintenance team, says, hey, you have maintenance due on this machine, so it keeps track of all that for you too. It wasn't a huge improvement. Those of you that have the X Series, it was an improvement, so you don't have to climb inside the machine to change blades. You don't have to climb inside the machine to remove liners. You simply pull it out and replace them, and they were not weld in, they were clamp in, so much better. Again, patented machine. This one took a long time to get patented because it had a lot of different things on it, but we're very happy that we got it, and it's a very good patent. And we do have barcode functions. We put barcode functions in these from 2013. We're still on the outer end trying to figure out how to get that all to work from a production standpoint. But we want that in there for inventory control, consignment, whatever we decide to do. And then we went to the GEM 3.0. Again, that was an improvement over the 2.0. We changed a bunch of reporting. We got feedback from a lot of our larger customers that said, hey, these reports are great, but they don't give me all the data I want, and they give me a bunch of stuff I don't want. So we modified those. We made them customizable. We condensed them. So, you know, we did all that as part of this upgrade. We also went to the real-time notification. So as an example, if you have a Pro or a GEM out there right now, and you have your colorant set at 2.75 pounds, and you want to know if it's, you know, gets over a tenth of a pound too heavy, you could get a text right now. If your operator's applying too much or too little, it would send you a text or an email and say, hey, your machine is now working outside of its specifications. And that's for water and color and output if you want it. We also put a pump calibration tool. So another good feature, you know, the pumps in this industry are huge. So if you don't keep your pump maintenance up, you have no clue how much color you're putting on unless you're using a scale and you've got a good operator. So we've made it so that, you know, you get a reminder every so many hours you should check your pump calibration. We have tools on the screen where you enter all the data. I use this many pounds in this amount of time, and I'm running this color, and it spits out the number that you're supposed to set your pump at. That's all part of that. Those are all the upgrades we did. All this was from feedback from not only our team, but from customers. And we improved the remote access. We made it so a guy in the loader operator could have an iPad or a tablet or something in his loader, and he could run the machine from there. So he wouldn't have to ever get out if he needed to adjust his water. If he wanted to do something else, he could change that. If he wanted to speed the machine up, slow it down, on a Pro, he could do all that from the seat of his loader. Then 16, we put the GEM LT together. GEM LT is basically built off the GEM platform. It doesn't control anything. All it does is calculate output. So you can put it on a grinder. You can put it on a coloring machine if you want, or you can put it on a Trommel screen. Anything that you want to know the volume off, even a feed line for bags or whatever, you can calculate it. It puts together the information, gives you a report, again, goes up to our database that tells you, okay, I produced this much, or I got this much volume in the yard. So great tool. We've got quite a few of those out where guys are using them on grinders just because they want to know what their raw inventory is. It's designed to mount on whatever, you know. Like another example is if you have a conveyor that's portable that you use for coloring process or you use for your grinding process or whatever, we can mount them on that portable conveyor and you can move it and they'll do the work no matter where you're at. And it comes in either a 12-volt, so it hooks into grinders, diesel-powered units, or you can have 120-volt. Future technology, and I'm just about done here. GEM 4.0, what we're working on now. It's just the next step. So what we've done is we're changing our screens around. We're updating our screens. Our old screens are based on Windows XP. How many still remember that dinosaur? So these new ones are Windows 10. So they're faster. It can hold more data. more graphics. There's a lot we're doing with that, just the display itself. Those will be upgradable to any of our machines out in the field. And it just talks about parts ordering. Okay, parts ordering, it can be done right from the screen. It'll have exploded view. So if you have an X3 or a Pro and you want a new piece for whatever component, you just bring it up, hit the picture, and it blows it up the picture. You select the one you want, and it loads it and takes it from there. So it's a great improvement on parts ordering. Even more customizable reporting and mapping. Mapping is where you can, if you have multiple locations, you can go on and click on a map that shows where your machines are. You click on it and it gives you real-time data production. So the enhancements on that. Maintenance checkoff. As part of our maintenance program, it sends you email alerts, and then you go on the database and say, okay, I've completed this maintenance, and then it resets and moves forward. That's all being brought out to the screen. Again, customer feedback. Hey, it'd be easier if the operator or maintenance guy can do it right there at the screen. So we've brought that out. Going into auto calibration of pumps. Since we've been gathering all this data, we just take all this data and do nothing with it. We got it, and we see, okay, we're seeing that these changes are happening at about this interval, and this is what needs to be changed on these pumps. So we'll have auto calibration. So as it gets to so many hours, it will automatically adjust your pump. We'll still recommend that you verify that, but it will, that way, if your operator doesn't do that, it will do it for you. Now, it may not be to the extent that the operators normally do it, but it will calculate that and change it. And that will be a feature. If you don't want that, it can be turned off. But we found through the data, it's pretty consistent the way these pumps wear, the ones we use. Expanded database, again, we've invested tens and tens of thousands of dollars in our database, and we've expanded it to make it faster, larger, holds more material, more information for you guys. And again, the final thing, this is a software platform, so if you have a gym today and want to go to this upgrade, it can be downloaded. Investment in personnel. We have a great tech team. And we have a huge demand. As a matter of fact, this fall is extremely busy. This has been a very busy year. So we've made the investment. Kent's authorized to get another field technician down at the bottom. So to complement the guys we already have, we're going to shoot for somebody down in the south southern central area, so we can cover that area faster. I mean, these guys are putting lots of miles on, lots of hours in, and we just need to get them some help because, you know, we work on our equipment, we work on competitive equipment, we work on screens, we help put grinders, we do various things outside of ours, and it's just getting so big we can't handle it with the load we have. And then the other employee, the field analyst, field operation analyst, is a position that's new that we're investing in that will be someone that can take the data that we get from all of these equipment and help be proactive. So they can be proactive making calls to a customer and saying, hey, we see you're kind of running high or low on color, your water's changed or whatever. So this person will be monitoring that data so that we can help you as producers be more efficient in what you do. So whenever that position is filled, that'll be somebody that'll probably be acquainted and introduced to whomever in your sites handles that. But I think that's going to be a great benefit. Instead of you finding out the 15th of the month, hey, we're putting on an extra tenth of a pound, they'll find it the first day and let you know. And then finally, the lifespan of our X3 has been out there a long time, so we're making a bunch of changes on it. We're going to do the next generation of it, new and improved. And you can kind of see on there some of the things. It'll be built on the gym platform, meaning that it will be volumetric, it will report to the database, and it will have an improved feed system. It'll have some moisture detection in it. Again, we think that's valuable. So if an operator is running two different materials, and one's a dry pallet material or hardwood material, and the other's kind of a wet product, it can automatically detect that and say, okay, hey, for this amount of moisture, we don't need to add this much water. So it'll deal with that for you. And as that material changes through the course of the day, it will make those calculations and adjustments for you, help you control your water, okay? Better wear and power requirements, and of course it will be a patented item. So, any questions, comments, complaints? Yes, sir. It is, all of our sensors are ultrasonic. So on all of our equipment, we use ultrasonic sensors. So it's designed to go onto a conveyor, and that can be either a stacking type conveyor, or we've installed them on grinders, horizontal grinders that have an underbelly conveyor. We've installed them in there and got readings from there. So it kind of depends on the machine you're putting them on, but yeah, we need a point of output somewhere to measure it. But yeah, it's PLC controlled, and it uses ultrasonic sensors. And depending on how big and wide, it depends on how many we put in there. It has a sensor array that we install.
Hey, if you have a question, hold your hand up so I can give you the mic.
Thanks. I'm the lawyer for the group, and I'm just curious. You mentioned patent a couple of times. Does your company have a regular patent process for all of your stuff?
And
so
yes.
It does. I said, so I imagine you have a big licensing program as well.
Yeah, we do. I don't deal with that so much as the initial patents, but I mean, you know, if you've ever been involved with that, maybe you have. You got to have good attorneys, and I mean, it's just you send in what you think it ought to be, and it comes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and it ends up being whatever you want. But yes, we have BASF has a huge intellectual property is huge for us. So I mean, we want to keep as much of that in house as we can.
Sure.
Not just patents, but you know. Whatever.
Is there a big sort of infringement problem in your industry? I mean,
not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Not in color biotics, not in the mulch industry. We don't see that so much, no.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Questions? Thank you, David. We've got a break now. It's out in the hallway, sponsored by Milagro. So, and we're going to start again at 10:30.
It's not ready yet.
Me.